Today we're hearing a guest podcast with BEP author Deborah Robeck, who wrote Communication Strategies for Today's Managerial Leader. Given that communication is the lifeblood of an organization, managerial leaders need to understand how to use communication strategies to build their teams to achieve organizational objectives. Studies repeatedly point to the impact communication skills have on the ability of managerial leaders to succeed or fail. Too often, individuals move into managerial leadership roles without awareness of the need to improve their communication skills. We hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to this complete professional podcast on body language. I'm Emily Buist, Associate Director at SPA, and I'm delighted to welcome our guest Deborah Robeck, Professor of Management at Kennesaw State University. Just to give you all a bit of background about Deborah before we begin, for the past 25 years in her roles as a professor, speaker, coach and facilitator, Deborah has focused on helping individuals develop their leadership and communication skills. She has worked in service, manufacturing and public sector environments across a broad range of industries to collaborate with clients to enhance work productivity and relationships. Deborah has also authored 4 editions of the book Improving Business Communication Skills and written another communications book entitled Communication Strategies for Today's Managerial Leader. Deborah's work in writing, teaching and leading has been acknowledged for excellence in service through numerous awards, including most recently the 2011 Outstanding Article in the Business Communication Quarterly and the 2010 Best Paper Award. So, Deborah, a very, very warm welcome to you this afternoon, and thank you again for joining us.
Well, thank you so much.
I thought we could dive straight in with quite a basic question, but fundamental for this topic. When we use the term body language, what are we actually referring to there? I mean, how would you describe this term to our listeners?
Well, as you might know, that particular term has various meanings, and in the field of nonverbal communication, body language is one aspect, and it's technically called kinesics. And body language really deals with the eyes, with facial expression, with postures, handshakes, body positions. But also embedded in that area of nonverbal is an area called paralanguage, which is the way we say the words, the tone, the intonation, the inflection, which uses words, but it's the way the words are said. So many times when people use the term body language, they do include the voice. And so that's something that sometimes can get a little confusing to individuals because actually, if we go back to that study by Albert Mehrabian, which is the most often cited study around this field of nonverbal, he talks about the emotion, and he breaks it down and basically says that only 7% of the meaning that we receive from a communication actually comes from the words. The other emotion or feeling comes from the body language, the kinesics, and the paralanguage, the way that it's said. So most people really perceive that the body language and the way the words are said really communicate much more strongly than the words. And so you have to wonder, why do we pay so much attention to the words when the body doesn't lie?
Okay, fantastic. Thank you for that really thorough answer. It's very interesting. A lot of our listeners will be presented with situations whereby they're meeting perhaps somebody in their professional service line or a new client for the very first time. And obviously the impression that they make in that 7 seconds when they first face with a new person, that first impression, it's really vital that they come across in the right way. How would you suggest that our listeners can ensure that they make the right impression through their body language in these kind of situations?
Yeah, you're so right, because we used to say it takes, you know, what, 4 seconds to form a first impression and then 4 hours to overcome that first impression.
Yep.
But now they're even saying that we make an impression even quicker than that, can be kind of as much as a 40th of a second. And so we do form opinions of people in just a few seconds. And some of that goes back to just relying on what we call that gut feeling. You know, we instantly like someone or we don't, and so we make a judgment. So when you're meeting someone for the first time, as you said, you do want to put your best foot forward. And that's a cliche, but it bears a lot of truth, because when you're meeting someone, you do want to pay attention to your feet, believe it or not, because if your feet are not pointed toward the person, and say, for example, your feet are pointed out or to the right or to the left, then that's communicating nonverbally you really want to be out of there. What you want to do is face the person front on, you know, with your body toward them, shoulders back. Shoulders always demonstrate confidence. That's why in the military, you know, they'll put stripes and pads on the shoulders so that you look confident and in authority. And then, of course, as I said, keep those toes pointed toward them, and then smile. Smile and establish eye contact. And that's critically important. And then, of course, you get into the importance of making a handshake. And, you know, with a handshake, you want to, you know, lean forward, you know, I guess that might be too strong of a word, but clasp the other person's hand in a parallel to the body. You don't want to use two hands. You don't want to try to dominate by causing the other person to have their palm up. You want to keep them horizontal, I guess, to the floor and to the ceiling. And so very important, you know, that you keep those toes, front body, eye contact, smile, and a nice firm handshake. And you want to maintain that eye contact for a minimum of like 3 seconds. You don't want to stare at them, but you do want to establish that eye contact. Because
we
often say that the eyes are the windows to the soul. Mm. And so people read nonverbally based on what the eyes do. And so if we don't, and again, this can relate culturally as well. So you have to understand the culture of the country in which you are having that first introduction. But in more Western cultures, United States, probably true of the UK, you know, you look at them. You don't look down. You don't look up or away.
Okay. And are there any particular types of body language that have been proven to reveal something either very positive or negative about a person? I've found from research that I've carried out that, you know, crossing your arms or inverting your shoulders can be perceived as defensive or perhaps guarded behaviour. Do you think there's any truth in such assumptions? I know you've mentioned, you know, the importance of a very strong shoulders and showing outward body language. But do you think there's any truth in this?
Well, I think, yes, there are certain things that, because we honestly, you know, I would often say when I talking or working with someone, I'll say, okay, for the next 30 seconds, we're not going to communicate. And what do people do? Their face may turn red, they smile, they look around. So they're communicating. So we cannot stop the nonverbal communication. And so I do think there are certain kinds of gestures, for example, that do communicate things to us. But my caution would be that we need to look at them in the context. So, you know, for example, if someone's rubbing their eye, you know, it may not mean they're tired. They may have an irritation in their eye. Or if someone's standing with their arms crossed, we don't want to immediately assume that they're defensive or closed off, but maybe they're cold. If they're scratching their nose, you know, they may have an itch. They may not necessarily be telling a lie. And so we have to look at the context of the situation. And then we have to look for what's called gesture clusters, which means, for example, you were communicating with an individual, and you were sharing some information, and all of a sudden, the individual crosses his or her arms. He tucks his chin down. He crosses his legs. All of those signals are saying, ooh, I don't like what you're saying, and so I'm withdrawing from the conversation. So as an effective communicator, what we have to learn to do is to try to back up, be observant of nonverbal, back up, and then try to open them up again so that they'll be receptive to what we're saying. There are what are called pruning gestures, which are really things that we do and we're not even aware of them. For example, women flick their hair, and men will adjust their ties. You know, Prince Charles does.
Yes, sure. Quite common here.
And so that's just when a woman sees someone who's attractive, she'll kind of throw, you know, or flick the hair, and the guys will adjust the tie, you know, to make sure that they're sharp and crisp and all of those things together. And, you know, and so there are different kinds of nonverbal signals and gestures. You know, there are basically, I think, about 6 facial expressions that are universal across the world, and we can tell by someone's face what they're communicating: happiness, sadness, fear, disgust, surprise, and anger. Those are universal. And so I guess, again, my caution in any of those different body gestures would be to look at that context and to watch what has occurred in the conversation. For example, a power dominance position that sometimes men will use is they will lean back in their chair and they'll put their hands behind their head, and this is called the cape and the crown. And so what that does is that demonstrates I'm in charge. And any time that people put barriers between them and who they're talking to, for example, a desk or a square table, which has boundaries and corners, which automatically sets territory, then that's demonstrating dominance. If you want to open up a conversation and have someone really communicate, of course, using something like a, you know, a round table levels the playing field, so to speak. I often tell when I'm coaching or working with individuals for presentation skills, there's, you know, certain hand gestures you want to be careful of doing. Anytime we kind of clasp our hands or rub our hands, that can look nervous or make us look nervous to our audience. And so we may not even be aware that we're doing it. Steepling, where you take the fingers together and kind of, you know, press them upwards, can also be a sign of dominance or power, but at the same time, it can be a gesture that can be distractive when you're presenting.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's helpful or not. But
no, absolutely. A very thorough answer, and I'm sure it's going to be of great value to the people listening. Do you think that learning to master your own body language increases confidence? I mean, I know we mentioned there that being able to manage your own body language and respond to that of others is all about being, you know, a good observer and I suppose emotionally intelligent to some degree as well. But just going back to the question, do you think that it would increase confidence if you learn to master your own, and would it help with reading other people?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, the United States is now, you know, in the throes of the political campaign for president. And I would imagine that all of the candidates who have been running for office have had a coach, either a body language coach or a communication coach, someone who has helped them master their nonverbal communication to, you know, to appear more trustworthy, more open by, you know, using palms up. And so I think if, for example, if you look at some of the video presentations of Hillary Clinton when she was first the first lady many years ago, and you look at her today, there's a vast amount of self-confidence in her demeanor and the way that she presents herself. And so I think learning, number one, to be more observant and to be in touch not only with understanding the importance of it, but being aware of your own nonverbal communication and what you're communicating is critically important. And I often encourage people to tape themselves, you know, turn on the camera during the meeting and just go back then and watch that tape of yourself and notice your nonverbal communication and the cues that you may not even be aware that you're giving off, which may be positive or negative. And then, you know, I like to use the acronym ACT, A-C-T, which I believe A stands for awareness. You know, the first step to making any kind of behavioral change is we have to be aware. We have to understand what's effective, body language, what's not effective, what we're doing, not doing. And then we have a choice to change or not change. So that's a C. And then T is tenacity, which stands for we have to be willing to put in the time and effort. You know, they often say it takes 21 days to form a habit. So making these behavioral changes are not going to come quickly. So we have to learn to, you know, get a coach or have a support system or do something that's going to help us be willing to make those changes, reward ourselves in some way.
Okay. And do you think that there are any strong links between somebody that has very good body language and how successful they are?
I think so. You know, just example, you know, going back to the Hillary Clinton, you know, in the beginning when some videos that I watched of her, she looked more timid, more reserved, like when the audience would clap, she finally stood up. Now, you know, she's more confident. She engages the audience. One gesture that politicians use, which makes the audience feel engaged with them, is they'll actually point their finger like they're pointing to someone in the audience and say, thank you for being here. And so they may not be pointing at anybody in particular, but the people in the audience, hey, was she pointing at me? Was she looking at me? And so it's just doing those kinds of things just engages that audience. So absolutely.
Definitely. And I think as well, if you point out, if you try and identify somebody in your audience, it makes that personal connection, doesn't it, where they feel that really they're the only person in the room, which I think can be quite a powerful thing as well.
Yeah. And you have to be careful with that finger pointing too, because, you know, for us as managers and leaders, when we point the finger, you know, it can come across as condescending and, you know, in someone's face. And so anytime we engage or welcome people to ask questions or to participate, if we use what's called a palms up gesture, so we show our palms, then it demonstrates openness and honesty, and that further, you know, engages individuals to participate with us and want to be involved.
Okay, well, fantastic. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. I know we've only skimmed the surface of this very large topic, but I'd like to thank you again for your time this afternoon and your contribution to this topic, which will be invaluable to our listeners. We'd like to wish you as well all the best with your future research and work, but thank you again.
Oh, thank you so much.